Hey everybody, welcome to Film Class Zeros, where we talk about movies as film nerds do. I'm Alex, and with me is the right hand of podcasting, Rich. What's up, dude?
I do like that. I like that. That's going to come into play when we talk about the movie that we're talking about.
Van Helsing, the 2004 Hugh Jackman masterpiece?
masterpiece is right. Masterpiece is a very weighty term to use for this movie.
We could be charitable and just call it a film that he's in, and
yeah, or a piece, just a piece.
Yeah, piece. Yeah, right.
It's just a piece.
I like vehicle.
Well, let me ask you, because our last episode was Top Gun and Top Gun Maverick,
right?
This episode, you know, we're heading into spooky season, mm-hmm. and you suggested I've been calling it Van Halen the entire time. You've suggested Van Helsing. Why did you pick this movie?
I'm fully aware of what this movie is, right?
Okay.
So I'm not going in and starting this off by saying like, this is a great movie. We know what we're watching. However, I have a soft spot for this film just because of the people who are in it. I'm fans of. I'm a huge Jackman fan, mm-hmm. and you know, same thing with Kate Beckinsale. There's a lot of like interesting character actors in this thing. I like the subject matter. I think the movie is really fun. I know it's not good, but I do enjoy it. And since, like you said, we're coming into spooky season, I was like, yo, Van Helsing's on deck. Let's hop in and let's have fun and talk about it. So I made you watch it.
No, don't apologize. How many times have you seen this movie?
I've probably seen it several times. I did see it in theaters, and I don't think I walked away going like, wow, this is the best movie. I was like, well, I saw that like movie, but it was one of those movies that just was on that rotation of action stuff that was coming out, and mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure I have like a bootleg DVD of it somewhere that was just in regular rotation with all like the Underworld stuff. Not Underworld like Secret, but the movies, the Underworld movies.
That's how I know you're a huge Hugh Jackman fan, is that you've watched this movie several times.
Well, okay, well, let's get into it. So the movie, it's a 2004 vehicle. The subject matter is it's a Universal movie, Universal right. Pictures, and that leans heavily on this whole thing. The whole thing is taking the character of Van Helsing, and where traditionally in the Dracula story is, you know, a professor, and but now in this one he's a, you know, hunky vampire hunter, but he's like a monster hunter that is being charged to defeat evil by a secret organization that lives beneath the Vatican. So right. He goes through the, you know, like the Universal Pictures monster universe. This is his introduction to it. And he's tasked to, like I said, like defeat them. It's just like a fun romp with like a lot of stuff that happens in this movie that we'll get into. But that premise alone excites me. So I think it's cool. It even starts off like, you know, black and white, and there's an angry pitchfork wielding mob because they're going to go to Victor Frankenstein's lab. He just brought Frankenstein's monster to life. It's like this homage to that old style of monster movie. And then we also get introduced to, but the funny thing is like we drop into it, and then Dracula is there, and Dracula is like the backer for his project, and then whispers into his ear. He's like, this is why I paid you to do this. And he's like, oh, I would never do this weird necromancy if I knew it was for these creepy reasons. And then he's like, well, too bad. And he kills him. And then Igor joins Dracula. And then the movie moves on. Then we switch to Van Helsing. We're off to the races. What did you think about this movie at this point? What did you think about the intro?
Listen, I'm a huge Universal Monsters fan. I'm a big fan of the monsters. I love the monsters. I'm a big fan of the Frankensteins and the Draculas.
And the moment, all them Frankensteins.
But like this movie's, you know, it already hooked me, because I always loved the creature design for this specific Frankenstein's monster. You know, I thought it was really cool how he's kind of like almost like a marionette, where he's got like all these moving parts and his head's full of like electricity. I always thought that was really cool. I enjoyed the beginning, but then like there's a weird thing with this movie. So Stephen Sommers directed this. He directed the first couple of Mummy movies, I believe. And this is supposed to be like Universal's kind of like soft start or foray into bringing the classic monsters back. You know, coasting off of the success of those Mummy movies, which are great. I love those movies. I think this immediately lacked the heart of those movies. And there was like cool stuff in this movie. Don't get me wrong. I thought it was a little too long. I'm going to get like my grievances out of the way up top so we can just talk about the movie. I think it was a little too long. I think a lot of it went nowhere. This is a weird thing about this movie. As soon as I get bored, something cool happens.
Yeah.
You know, this movie is very easy to tune out. But again, like then they'll hit you with like these glimmers of like, whoa, that's really cool. I love the whole like introduction to like the Holy Order. And, you know, that plot point is like, these guys, it's like every religion on the world has banded together for the greater good to stop these monsters.
It's really hokey, though, the way they introduced that whole order.
Yeah.
It's very funny because, so if for those who haven't seen it, and obviously we're spoiling the heck out of this movie, we're introduced to Van Helsing, and he's hunting down Mr. Hyde of Jekyll and Mr. Hyde sort of fame, you know, voiced by Robbie Coltrane.
Yes. So,
again, like, there's like a lot of heavy hitters in this movie just getting a paycheck and walking out of there. So Van Helsing's a slick guy. There's wanted posters of him, and he's got, you know, like a fedora and a big like leather duster, and he's got all these crazy gadgets like a grappling hook and buzzsaws that he powers through squeezing, you know. It's like those grip exercise machines, but there are buzzsaws on it, so he's got like these wacky gadgets that can cut through, you know, the floor of the of a cathedral, right?
Very goofy.
Yeah. So he kills there's a very pitched battle between him and a CGI Mr. Hyde, and he kills him, and then he runs to the Vatican because he's in France, so obviously like next day. He goes into the Vatican, and they bring him into the lair, the order's lair, and this is where it becomes like a parody of a Bond film. And I think this sort of continues throughout, because now it's like he goes down to this lair, and it's the Q branch part of any Bond movie where he's being walked through, and we see the experiments going behind him. There's all this exposition about we're a holy order that's been around for a long time, and we are multi-denominational, and you see priests and monks and rabbis and everyone, and a lot of like stereotypical like Mamma Mia is in the back like whoever's supposed to be talking, to show you that it's not just like a Catholic ordered, you know, doing things. It's like, no, everyone, we're all on board. It's evil, we're fighting evil together. And we get our Q character, which is Carl the friar.
Fucking Carl.
Carl. Okay. I want to hold that thought, but yeah, Carl is basically Q, and he's like, he's even got like the Q voice where he's like, this is a crossbow, but it is a he's not Italian, but he's like, he's got that weird voice. He's like, it can fire darts very fast, and I have a grenade, but I don't know what it does. And there's all like these goofy things happening around, and it's Van Helsing's walking around with like that Bond-esque smug, like, well, what's this? This is dumb. This is ridiculous. You're coming with me. You know, you don't know what it does. You've been working on it for 20 years. You know?
Right.
At this point, now it's like we have already established how stupid this movie is with a full on Bond parody of the secret order that has a whole division beneath Vatican City itself.
There is charm to it, though. You know, like I feel like there has to be a way to watch this movie correctly where you don't take a steaming hot dump on it, you know. And I tried to do that, and you know, I think it worked. I think it definitely worked. I feel like I just like, I usually don't watch movies to hate watch them, and I'm not saying I hate watch this movie, but there were certain aspects where I was like, this is so bad that it's not good, you know. But then there are certain scenes in the movie where you're like, oh, this is deliciously terrible, but it's great. All this stuff for the most part with the wives is so terrible, but it's all excellent, especially with like their wacky accents and their terrible CGI. That stuff like works. I think if it's purposely supposed to be hokey and goofy and very campy, it does a good job. The other thing about this, you know, like we're going from like that Q lair thing, which is like a lot of cool practical effects, a lot of cool steampunk stuff. I feel like this stuff, for some reason in my head, I'm like, oh, this must have influenced like the Bloodborne and like Dark Souls games, because it's almost the exact same thing. This movie also suffers from another movie in our canon. It suffers from the CGI like Blade did, you know, where if the CGI was better, I think it would be a different story. But it's also very unbalanced. Frankenstein looked friggin' great. He pretty much looked awesome through the whole movie. The Brides look terrible, and Dracula looks terrible. And I think there's a lot to be reconciled in this movie.
I want to go back because you definitely have thoughts on Carl the Friar. I want to hear what you think about him.
I think it's fine. I think every single person apart from Van Helsing is a throwaway character in this movie. Even though like Carl survives at the end, he's sort of the deus ex machina in a few scenes, you know, where it's like, oh, if it wasn't for Carl, we really would have bit it.
Yeah, he runs around with like a big Felix the Cat sack of stuff.
Yeah.
That it's just like always has the right thing. It's like holy water, silver bullets, you know, here's a, you know, all these things that just at the right time, he's got everything and it's always ready to go. What did I want to say? Oh, the beginning of the movie, it's very sloppy where it just dumps a whole lot of exposition at you, where it's just kind of like, you know that you shouldn't do this because we are all these things. And he just goes through a list of like, this is your backstory that you are an amnesiac in our service and we task you to do these things. And then he gets his assignment, which I'm still not clear on. I watched this movie. So he has to go. They tell him he has to go and save the last remaining people in a particular bloodline, which is Kate Beckinsale and her brother, because if they die before Dracula dies, their family will, their whole bloodline will be stuck in purgatory forever. Is that right? Did I get it right?
Something like that. They don't do a good job of explaining that a werewolf is the only thing that could kill Dracula.
Oh yeah, that's a whole thing that I was talking to my girlfriend while we were watching this. I keep saying that, and I knew that because I was reading the notes in the Wikipedia page. I don't remember it being said in the movie.
Yeah, me neither. And you know, I was paying close attention to it. And then again, this is where like I feel like it could have been a little shorter. It could have been edited a little better.
Yeah,
and I think like a lot of the stuff is convoluted where as far as like the exposition goes on paper, cool, right? So it's like Kate Beckinsale and her brother's a werewolf. They're the last in line and Dracula is hunting them down because he knows the only thing that could kill him is a werewolf, which is weird. Yeah. Then later on, it's revealed that, well, not, I shouldn't say revealed. Well, I will, you know what? I will say revealed. So later on, Van Helsing gets bit by a werewolf and he starts transforming into one. So you're like, okay, I guess he can kill Dracula now. And then Dracula says, hey, you're the guy that killed me and I had to make a deal with the devil to become Dracula, but also you're the Archangel Gabriel.
Yeah,
it's in some weird regard.
It's the stakes are very weird on both sides. So there's two things, right? There's his mission to save this family and their lineage. It's like, oh, well, if they die, then their family doesn't go to heaven. And it's like, okay, well, as an audience member, how am I meant to really, I care if these people die, but it's like, oh, they're stuck in purgatory. It's like, that's very much left to just your interpretation. So it's like, so I'd hate to say this, but it's like, so who cares? And then on Dracula's thing, he's got this whole plan because he tries to use, he tries to use the werewolf brother of Kate Beckinsale in this convoluted machine to, because his whole thing is he wants to bring a brood of dead baby vampires to life with all this stuff. None of this stuff is really, it's so, like you said, convoluted and silly that it's really hard to kind of give a shit about all of it because you're like, all right, like the conceit of using this giant life-giving machine that Victor Frankenstein built and, you know, his monster being like the key component to it doesn't make any sense. But again, it's just like a throwaway thing just so we can, these are all excuses so we can move things along. But the movie has to catch up with it. So when we get to the end, it's like, all right, like, I guess this was the thing that we were sort of putting off this whole time that we were worried about. But now we have to answer this question and it's kind of like, and you know,
right? Again, very, very, very convoluted. I think my takeaway, again, like for some reason, I'm still like kind of watching it and like I guess enjoying it for the most part. But you know, it's like I think every other scene is enjoyable, and like the in between those scenes, it's a snooze fest. You know, which is weird. You know, because I feel like there's so much that this movie did right and a lot that it kind of did wrong. You know, it just seemed like it was like kind of haphazardly put together and Dracula's useless. This Dracula is a useless Dracula, you know, and then it made me think of other Draculas and I'm like, you know what? He is kind of useless for the, like, he's cool as hell. But in the other, in that traditional sense of the Dracula movies, he gets reawakened He starts thirsting for blood. He wants a wife. He wants Jonathan Harker's wife. And he turns into like a wolf and mist and bat, like all this shit, right?
Yeah.
This Dracula has like a weird, he's kind of dumb, right? He's going about, I feel like he's going about stuff the wrong way. Like he could totally do what he needs to do without making such a big like production out of it. Like we get it. Like this guy's hunting monsters. Maybe you should run your operation a little more clandestine.
Yeah, it's very, very silly. And I think it's a good time to talk about Richard Roxburgh's performance of Dracula, because you're talking about big production. This dude is in a big production of the Dracula movie starring Dracula as him as Dracula. And he's so over the top. There's a couple of standout things. The actor who played the Frankenstein's monster throughout the whole movie, he's like doing like these operatic laments.
Yes.
You know, everything. Why are you doing this to me? And this is every line he says in the movie. It's not even just when he's in distress. He's just kind of like, please.
Yeah, exactly. I can help you. I absolutely love that, to be honest with you. Yeah. I loved it because I like that over the top portrayal of Frankenstein's monster. But it reminded me, we recently just finished watching Year of the Rabbit, Matt Berry. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it.
It's set in like the Victorian era of England. One of the characters that he relies on for help is the Elephant Man, who is like a master actor. And he proclaims as much as that. So it reminded me of that, where like the Frankenstein in this movie is very much like, I must help humanity, you know, or like, it will be the doom of you all. I loved it. I like that. Again, the spinoff of this movie was Frankenstein.
Yeah. So I like to think about like all the like the parts of dead people that Victor Frankenstein cobbled together to make the monster. Mm-hmm. Those bits were from like a dead opera singer.
Yes.
And it's the only way he knows how to talk.
Like an actor, an opera singer. You
it's
know,
just like a dead opera singer that he dug up, and it's like that's his like throat and mouth. Like, oh,
like the artisans, you know, like you just put them all in like one person. Mm-hmm. Again, I wish I would stay tuned if there was like a Frankenstein spinoff of this movie. I feel like it's 20 years too late, but you know, keep that design, man. He looked nuts. Not a fan of the limp though, but you know, he looked pretty gnarly.
He was pretty gnarly, and I like, yeah, again, like the whole like the parts that like pop out, and you know, like he was like, it was like that was like they designed him for the action figures that never came. But also, so again, big performance from that guy, but big performance from Richard Roxburgh for Dracula. He's doing accents in this movie across the board are all over the place.
Everybody's are, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like everyone's is just like everyone is supposed to be supposedly doing some sort of accent, and whatever they're doing ain't it. But
I think like, Carl is the only one who stuck to his accent.
Yeah. No, I think so too. Yeah, he was just here the whole time and just talked like this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I guess that's kind of hard to do throughout the whole movie. But Dracula's whole thing where he's doing the big Dracula voice.
Yeah.
And he sounds like he's trying to do the classic one. And every time I'm watching this guy, and especially with all the jokes that they throw in, I'm like, he's taking off of Leslie Nielsen's Dracula from Dracula Dead and loving it. I'm watching him and that's what I'm seeing. I'm like imagining, you know, Leslie Nielsen joking around and you know, having like a conversation with Mel Brooks, who's playing Van Helsing in that movie. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm like, this is the same performance.
If you told me, hey, this movie's a goof, I would like right off the bat, I would like it more. But I remember it being promoted as like a genre defying action movie.
It takes itself very seriously. Credit to Hugh Jackman, who's like straight laced the whole movie. Like he's playing it straight.
Yeah.
I feel like the guy who plays Connor is hamming it up. I feel like Dracula's going way big.
Bigger than big. He got some kind of like Razzie. It wasn't a Razzie. It was he won that year for like a worse accent in a movie.
Yeah. In that movie.
Yeah. Specifically, I think Kate Beckinsale was also nominated for how terrible her accent was for like whatever. It was like a Razzie equivalent award.
Yeah.
And like, why not just let her speak normally? I always think it's weird when movies are like, hey, listen, you have a European accent or an Australian accent or a British accent. Just do that instead of like, Listen, you need to be some kind of Wallachian, Romanian, Transylvanian, whatever. Right. And then you can't, because it's made up, you can't stick to it.
Yeah.
And the bride, the brides too. The brides, all their accents were all over. I was like, are they Russian? Are they Greek? They all kind of sound like Nadia from What We Do in the Shadows. Like, yeah. What's the deal with this?
Yeah, I think one of them was like she sounded like Spanish or Latin American or something. But it's all like, because like that's probably like her, you know, her background, and then just kind of go with it. But everyone's different, and I don't mind that. I'm not looking for consistency, but they're doing I can only imagine that the direction that they're given is just kind of like everything you're gonna do. Over-exaggerate everything, and then we're going to CGI your faces, and we're going to over-exaggerate that stuff, so everything is just pushed over to like a whole thing. Going back to Kate Beckinsale too, I feel like she is a talented performer, and she, you know, definitely has experience in movies like this, like the whole Underworld stuff. In this movie, she's just like, I don't buy her as just being part of this kind of sleepy Romanian village. You know, her and her brother are just like, they're way more like fit and beautiful in comparison to everyone else that supposedly like they live with. They always look really well put together. They're always in these beautiful tableaus, her and Van Helsing, because the movie is just designed to make these guys look, you know, beautiful in shots. And I'm for it. But there is like that disconnect, which is kind of like, wait a minute, you're part of this whole group of people? Like, I don't know.
They're all gorgeous. Like, they're like, her and her brother are like gorgeous people in this village of lumpy Europeans, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, like, it's classic movie making, you know? Like, when was the last time you watched The Ten Commandments?
Oh, been a while.
Okay. Charlton Heston, Moses. He towers above every single person in that movie. You know, and he's like this giant strapping dude. And if you watch that movie, it's a great flick. If you watch it again, you're like, yo, he towers over all these lumpy Egyptians, you know? And I feel like that's just like movie making, where it's like, you know, they're the beautiful people in this village. So, of course, they have all the privilege. And guess what? One of them's like a gorgeous, whatever she is. And her brother's like a hot werewolf.
A lot of hot werewolves in this.
So take us out of the village, because this is the introduction to Kate Beckinsale and I guess Van Helsing's love interest.
I didn't really buy that whole thing too. Like they sort of fall for each other as they pursue Dracula, and so at this
sort
point,
of.
Yeah. Well, here's where the movie sort of falls apart, because like you do all this setup and then they're like, all right, what are we going to do with this? Because they have one cool introduction into the village where they fight like the wives, and then they're chasing and trying to find the you know what's happening. There's like one car chase, you know, basically. Mm-hmm. And then the other scene is like the ballroom thing, because they want to do an exchange for Kate Beckinsale gets captured. They want to trade her in for Frankenstein. Obviously, it's a whole setup, but there are these action set pieces, and that's what I think you're talking about, where it's just kind of like everything in between these parts, it just kind of like falls flat, and it's kind of like eh. And that is a diminishing thing throughout towards the end. So when we get to the end, we're in Dracula's castle. You know, they're killing everyone off one by one. And he has to kill Dracula, but he's also turning into a werewolf. So there's a big CGI fight between werewolf him and CGI Dracula monster. And it's like the end of Killer Instinct 2, if you played like Saberwolf, which is like the gargoyle bad guy. And this is where we're at with the movie, where it's just kind of like, now it's just kind of like all the cool stuff passed. We're just wrapping it up.
Yeah. Again, I think if somebody re-edited this movie, it would be a lot better, you know, like
and shorter.
And it's too long. It's 2 hours and 12 minutes. But like you go from like almost like a snooze fest to them finding Frankenstein's monster in like an abandoned windmill or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, you get introduced to the whole like woe is me kind of thing. I want to live.
Yeah. They try to be like super philosophical about existence. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of like you're like a lumpy action figure toy thing.
Right. And then I thought the part where they're like, oh, we need to bring him to the Vatican so he'll be protected.
Yeah.
Let's put him in this stagecoach and chain him up. And then you get like a kind of like a pretty cool, like, you know, like I guess like the equivalent of a car chase, which is like a stagecoach chase with like the brides and everything, which I thought was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever happens between like they lock up Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah.
You kind of get put to sleep. And then you go to like Anne's castle. Kate Beckinsale's like castle, where Dracula has an army of vampires dancing around doing like the masquerade, and the, you know, you get the reveal in the mirror where he's like, hey, I'm Dracula. And then she gets saved by Van Helsing. Again, like, very convoluted. But during this whole time, they found, like you were saying, they found Frankenstein's monster and brought him in.
Yeah.
I feel like that could have been the end of the movie.
there was an extra bit, and there was all like these moving pieces around. So when we get to the end, it's like that all the side characters have been killed off. Carl's alive. They find Dracula has the cure for lycanthropy, because if a werewolf comes to kill him, he could just cure him and then he's protected, right?
Very convenient.
Yeah, right. And it's in a whole, like, it's like a video game item that you find in the castle. A lot of this stuff is like a video game, which we'll talk about in a second. When they have this battle, you know, he kills Dracula, and it's kind of anticlimactic, where it's like, you know, the CGI thing just bites him and then he melts. But now he's like a beasted out werewolf.
Full-blown
CGI werewolf. Kate Beckinsale comes in with the syringe of the cure. He charges her, and then he gets up, and she had stuck him, and he is cured. But in the interim, she dies on the fainting couch, because I guess he killed her like by charging her. So it's supposed to be sad.
Right, but here's the thing with that. Her character has been through the ringer in this movie.
Yeah.
And a tackle from a werewolf is what kills her.
She dies beautifully. She's not mauled. She's not like, there's no visible imagery, and she just she's in a, like, this wonderful tableau on like this couch that's very convenient. She's like,
yeah, she looked beautiful.
Yeah, she's great. It's the most beautiful. Yeah, she died beautiful. They give her the Return of the Jedi, you know, Viking funeral at the end. Her ashes turn into she does a Mufasa ending, where like her face appears in the clouds, and her family's there, and they're reunited, and they go into heaven, and Van Helsing's like, cool, hey Carl, let's ride into the sunset. And then
Frankenstein's monster is on a raft, and
he's on a
like,
raft,
I'm out of here.
Yeah, he's in this dinky raft that is going out to sea. It's smaller, it's like the size of the door from Titanic, and he's got like a lamp and an oar, and it's just kind of like, I guess I'm gonna go die at sea, because I know nothing about being a sailor or sailing. I'm just gonna go off. He couldn't have ridden off in the distance. He just had to. They had to put him on like this shitty raft and then send him out into the ocean.
Well, I think they were trying to parallel what happens to the monster in the book, because at one point he does that. Like, he gets on a boat and goes to like the Arctic to be left alone, but then he gets like hunted down.
He's not getting to the Arctic on that couple of logs that he's like sailing on.
He's just gonna drown.
So yeah, and then you know you get the. We set up for the sequel. Van Helsing will return in, you know, The Search for Crowley's Gold.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that never happened. They never made another one. But
they never made another one. The movie was a success, even though it was a critical flop.
Right. So I'm going to say my piece here. I like this movie, and I think that it's a lot of fun. And I think that, you know, all the stuff that Universal wanted to do with their Dark Universe, they were trying to kick that off with, like, the Tom Cruise mummy and so on. This could have been that. You know, if they did this movie now, that might have been like the launch pad for what they wanted to do with The Mummy. I think if they retried to do that, that'd be a lot of fun. The other thing I'll say is this movie feels to me like the Castlevania movie that we never got and we will probably never get, not in this sort of thing, because it's like a fun video game sort of setup. And, you know, Van Helsing is like one whip away from being, you know, one of the Belmont vampire hunters. Just you change a couple things, and this is a Castlevania movie with all like the cool monsters that you like and all the bosses, and I kind of love that.
It's an interesting movie, and I think you touched on a few things that are, I think this movie's a victim of its time, in a way, you know, because like franchisability for a movie has always existed. But I don't think it was until the Marvel movies where studios were like, yeah, we can turn, if one movie's a hit, we can make sequel after sequel after sequel, and people will still be coming back. Like, once you crack that formula, like, look at all the Marvel movies, look at all the Fast and Furious movies. It's like it just keeps going. It just keeps going. Even like the DC stuff, there's no continuity there, but you're going to get spinoff after spinoff, TV show after TV show. I know there was like a Van Helsing TV show recently, but I don't think it has anything to do with, you know, the Hugh Jackman stuff at all.
No.
The thing with this movie is I feel like if they wanted to make it, that the tweaks that I would do to make it franchisable would have been, he doesn't kill the monsters. He captures them. And the Vatican would have like this menagerie of monsters And then, you know, you can kind of go forward with the sequels after that. You know, like, his story was not fleshed out at all. I don't think anybody had a super fleshed out story in this movie. But a sequel would have been cool if you saw, like, oh, maybe he is the angel Gabriel, or he's not. Or maybe because he's an angel, his love interest in Kate Beckinsale's character was minimal because angels are supposed to be asexual, right?
All right.
So, like, that whole thing is, like, interesting. There's no rhyme or reason for him to do what he does, you know? And it's, like, very status quo at the end of the movie where he's like, ah, it sucks that you died. You're in heaven now with your family. Cool. That's what you wanted. Me and Carl are okay. The monster's cool. Let's get out of here. Boom. You know? And you kind of would have liked to see, like you said before, Van Helsing can be seen again in the next Van Helsing.
I think that it's really just, if you look at how movies were made then and now, obviously things are a lot different because the mentality of things at the time were, we're making either one of these or three of these. We don't have the time to flesh everything out. We, you know, something like this would really benefit from the breathing room that we give a lot of IPs and franchises and characters now. You know, like, this could be, you know, streaming, you know, 10-part series. That would have been great. And so, you know, and then that could have grown or manifested organically into something else. Marvel's whole thing was basically taking what they did with comic books and adding and making that process of the shared universe into the films. And then everyone just went, wow, like, we, that really works. And they're like, we've been doing this. We just, you know, that's always been our thing, just in comic book form. We are reimagining it and using that as a tool for the movies. And hey, look at that. It works.
Oh, for sure. It works across the board. And also, you get, like, you know, that last Jurassic Park movie was, I guess, like the merger of those worlds. And there's a million Jurassic Park movies.
Everyone's been trying to copy that whole formula to varying degrees of success. And I think that when you have something like this, if this movie existed now where they were looking to make the exact same thing, they would have a lot more options where we would have time to really invest in everyone's stuff and not trying to cram it in with sloppy exposition and all this other stuff. And like you said, like, the menagerie of monsters, that, you know, the secret order underneath the Vatican becomes like the Arkham Asylum of the Van Helsing universe.
Right. So, I think the danger with that is, you know, I would love to see that movie. I would love to see the movie where Van Helsing captures the monsters. He puts them in, like, the menagerie underneath the Vatican. I think the danger with that, though, is, like, if you go in that trend, you end up with, like, a weird League of Extraordinary Gentlemen movie, which is, like, another, like, terrible movie that came out around the same time, which that movie has a weird place in my heart, but it's not a great movie.
That movie has a place in my stomach because it makes me sick. Okay. Because I love, and again, it's the same thing where, like, the source material is really dense and really needs a lot of room to breathe. And you can't do all this stuff and shove it into one movie that you're thinking is going to be like a fun summer action blockbuster. That movie and the books are like slow burns that really, you know, you need to invest in. And it's very difficult to just get people off the street to just buy into it. And that's why I don't think the movie is pretty good at all. But I guess we'll bring it up next time.
Yeah, well, when we eventually do League of Extraordinary
Gentlemen. Oh, it'll come up. Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to happen. So I think with the Van Helsing stuff, it's also like the monsters will never die. The universal monsters will never die. You know, I just think they need a good vehicle as a launching point. You know, like, they tried. It's a shame that Mummy movie sucked. And I think that heavy reliance on CGI hurts it. If you go back to mainly practical effects and moody stuff, that would be great. And that would lend itself to the monsters because they are inherently, like, cheesy and spooky. Like, if you compare modern horror movies to your horror movies from the 30s, you're going to look at Bela Lugosi Dracula and go, oh, this is a cheese fest. You know, like, really over the top stuff. I think there's a way to do it, but I think now it's so tough. Like, all the Dracula stuff that's come out in the last 20 years, apart from that Netflix show, has been pretty much like garbage. They didn't use this as the soft launch for the Dark Universal Universe or whatever it was going to be called. It was supposed to be Dracula Untold, but with Luke Evans.
Yeah, I know the movie, but I can't remember the name of the actor.
Bard from The Hobbit. He was a Dracula, and they made him, like, kind of into a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he became Dracula to protect his town and, like, his kingdom and all that stuff and his love interest. Then they kind of scrapped that idea, and then they were like, oh, we're going to put all our eggs into the Mummy movie with Tom Cruise. This is how we're going to launch the monsters again. Mm-hmm. And that, because of that flop – I think in 2019, Universal was like, we're just going to make individual movies. There's not going to be like a shared MonsterVerse now, you know?
Yeah.
It backfired on them.
Like, I don't want to spin off into a whole tangent, but I think that when people try to copy they see the success of the Marvel stuff, like DC tried to fast track all the things that Marvel did over a span of movies and years, and they try to rush it out the door, and it fell apart. Dark Universe, they tried to do things and map it way ahead of time, which you kind of think you should do. You feel like you have it all planned out. You're not rushing into it, so it's going to come together. But they overreached and they said, this is the first movie in a franchise, and we have, I think it was a spread in like Vogue magazine or some publication where it's like, here are all the actors that are going to be in this movie. You know, we have the people that were in The Mummy, and we have Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and then, you know, the next movie is going to be The Bride of Frankenstein, and all these other people that are going to be in the movies that don't exist yet, and they're sort of saying this is going to be your Dark Universe. I think everyone collectively went like, oh, is it really?
Which
is not, it's kind of shitty, but it's also like unfortunate, like just that was the nature of it. And nobody really, you know, everyone trying to catch that Marvel like lightning in the bottle has had difficult things. But when they stumble, obviously there's a chance to do it again. Like DC kind of abandoned, you know, that their whole DC movie stuff, and have been doing like individual movies or carefully coming out with things and taking a different approach to things. So like, you know, like the Shazam movies, the Joker movie, all these other things, these are having success because they're not trying to copy Marvel. They're just trying to do something else. And I think that works.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's an opportunity here where we're in a place now where you have these cool characters and these great stories, you know, now you have different mediums of how to get them out there and to take the time and really get to have fun with them.
You know what I would love to see? This is just me. Since Universal owns all this stuff, obviously, and Universal owns, I believe, the Fast and the Furious franchise.
Okay.
Right? Let's say Fast 11 or whatever the two movies from now, right? Have you seen those movies?
The Fast movies,
yeah.
No, I saw the first one.
They're terrible, but they're also like deliciously terrible, you know. Yeah. Like they're watchable, but they're terrible. Since it's the biggest franchise in the world, it's owned by Universal. I would love it if, now hear me out, Fast and the Furious 11, the team gets back with Dom Toretto, and Dom Toretto is like, you know, we got a new mark, and then they're like, what do we got to do this time? What are we stealing? And then he's like, I don't know. It's like this chamber or whatever, right? So they steal this chamber, open the fucking thing. It's Frankenstein, right? So Frankenstein's monster's in it. They teach him how to drive a car. So he's fucking racing. And this leads into a new version of Death Race 2000, where Frankenstein is the unbeatable race car driver.
I love it. I don't know why they don't pay us to write these things. But I want to see Fast and the Frankensteins.
Fast and the Frankensteins would be a tremendous hit. If anybody from Universal is listening to this podcast,
Go ahead.
I'd
say Fast and the Frankensteins: Dracula Drift.
Amazing.
There you go.
Then they're like, there's a new European stunt racer.
Yeah.
Who we can't catch. And it's Dracula.
Yeah.
I would love to see that. And also, like,
I don't see him in my rearview mirror. You can't see me in the mirror.
There we go. Oh, perfect. Holy shit. He's like the ghost driver.
Yeah,
amazing. Yes. Amazing. Fast and the Frankensteins needs to happen.
Yes. I love it. Let's manifest it.
Take us out, dude.
Thanks so much for joining us and talking to us, your film class zeros. We had a lot of fun talking about Van Helsing, and Boogie season is upon us, and maybe we'll continue this track. But thanks for listening in. Hope you liked it. Whatever you want us to talk about, give us a mention what you want to see in our Twitter. We're at Film Zeros on Twitter. We would love to hear from you and get your feedback. And just chat about movies, because we do this for fun, and we want to bring you in, you know, along for the ride, the Fast and Frankenstein ride.
Later, everybody.
Bye, guys. Bye.